Hello and welcome to Tit Radio, episode 2. I'm Monster B, and at the round table with me today is Peter without the 64. He's not here.
Oh, g'day.
And Azmuth's not here. He's getting coffee. G. Lindsay?
I am too here.
G. Lindsay?
Oh, nice.
Peg Wall?
Howdy, howdy.
330?
Howdy.
Snap, Crackle, and Pop? Zoke?
Howdy.
Mrs. Oak?
Hi.
Let's get right into it. What the hell?
What is that?
I have no idea. Well, the sheep says, Peter.
Hey! You there, Zach?
Not for much longer, I think.
Already?
Yep. 5 minutes.
But why am I...
I don't care.
Oh, my God.
I don't need a reason.
He's in the bin.
That
see that pig
him.
We don't mess around on this show.
Yeah. Mrs. A, you can talk.
Are you sure? I don't want to be kicked into the bin.
Nah, you're fine. You're safe.
All right, who wants to start off first?
Oh, I can tell you about my trials and tribulations with my new laptop.
All right.
I think by now most people know that I've been shopping around and I ordered a Dell the other day. Now, I know I told this to Claire too at the end of Linux Cranks, but I'll just let people know the sort of thing they're up against when you ring tech support. Because trying to do a bit of research, I was sort of seeing that Dell Wi-Fi or MIDI Wi-Fi card they sell is could either be a Broadcom or there was something, some people saying it was an Intel chipset. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll ring up Dell anyway. Had nothing better to do. So I rang up and I got the same lady, I'm sure I got, who told me who hadn't heard of Ubuntu before. She certainly sounded the same. Anyway, I said, look, I just want to know about your Dell Mini Wi-Fi card. I said, what chipset is that? And I told her, you know, the laptop I'd buy, etc. And she said, it's a Dell. And I said, yeah, I know the name of it. But I said, no, what chipset's on it? And she said, yeah, it's a Dell chip. And I said, so Dell have a manufacturing plant and they actually make their own chips now. And she goes, yeah. And I said, you sure you don't want to ask someone? And she goes, no, I'm sure. And I said, I wish I had recorded this. And I said, well, just as a matter of interest, where's Dell's plant? And she burst out laughing, and she thought that was the funniest thing she'd ever heard. And right about then, I thought, well, this conversation going. And honestly, I started laughing too. Like, I wasn't cranky enough, and I hung up that phone as happy as Larry because it was just so funny to listen to her talk. But and I decided that's probably what they do. That's why they hire these people. But anyway, see, that's the thing you're going to be up against if you're trying to do research. I actually mentioned that story to Az, and he confirmed for me that it was a Broadcom chipset. So at least that way I could start doing a bit of research and find out what I had to do to get it working, which, as it turned out, was very simple. But the problem, once again, would you believe, when I got it finally turned up the other day, I stuck the Zeus disk in it, booted it up, installed it, and no sound. I'm somewhat of a sound expert, but not really, but having gone through all this just a week before with my wife's new one, I had a bit of an idea of what to do. Now, with hers, because it was an Acer, it was as simple as passing the option model equals Acer to the module, which is, what is it? What is it? Intel sound module or something, wasn't it? Sound HDA Intel module, that's what it is. And anyway, so it's as simple as putting model equals Acer. But with the Dell, and this is another thing too, there's so much information out there that new people have to be wary, that one of the, when I actually put it in Google to start looking for it, one of the posts I found, this bloke was trying to help some other people with a similar or the exact same chipset, but he went so far as to tell them that they had to install the kernel, the debug kernel and rebuild ALSA from SVN and all this sort of stuff. And I thought to myself, no, you don't have to do that to get this sound card working. But unfortunately, these people who he was helping obviously didn't know enough to think, well, hold on, this sounds a hell of a bit, like, you know, too complex to what you'd have to do. So that's another thing people have got to be wary of. Don't just get the first post and go through it and do what that particular person says. Because once again, it was simple. It was simple of just putting the model number in. But unlike my wife's, where you just had to write ASAR, with the Dell, I found quite a few options where you had Dell equals M, and I don't know what this means, M4-1, and I found -1, -2, -3. So I had to edit my, it's the etc's modprobe.d/soundfile to pass these options. And none of them worked. And I thought, oh, shit, don't tell me I really have to do it. I should send myself to the booby bin for that. Sorry about that. Anyway, so I had to keep looking at it. But what I did was I eventually found out that it was Dell-M6. So once again, the sound was a problem. The camera, which surprised me, going back, what, 12 months ago, maybe 18 months ago, you hadn't got a hope in hell of getting a webcam working with Linux. Now, I've played around with Zeus on this laptop, Kubuntu on this laptop. I now have Arch Linux. I put Arch on it last night. Every single time, the sound didn't work, but the webcam, the Wi-Fi was so easy. It's just simple as installing the Broadcom-WL package and restarting your network, and you have the ModProbe-WL. That's the module name. Too easy. Now, something else I've noticed with the laptop is there's not one light on my Dell. It's Studio 15, which you think, well, that's, when I say light, there's no hard drive light, there's no Wi-Fi light, there's no nothing. And you might say big deal, but also the other problem with it is the function keys, the F1 to F12, you need to hit the modifier FN key to use them. Otherwise, they are the hot keys to turn your sound on and off and muted, etc. But the F2 key, if you don't hit the function key, the F2 key turns your Wi-Fi on and off. Now, as people who run Flexbox are going to appreciate, you use your F2 key a hell of a lot. So if you're used to just hitting Control F2 to flick to Workspace 2 or the Mod 4 key to, you know, to send a window over there, and you don't hit your function key, hold down your function key, you turn your Wi-Fi on and off. And there's no light there to tell you that you've done it. The next time you boot up, if you happen to have done it, you'd sit there, restart the network, mucking around with Wicked, trying to find out why the hell your Wi-Fi's not running for half an hour, only to realise you turned the bloody thing off. So that's something I'm a little bit disappointed with the Dell.
What exact model do you have?
Well, I got the Studio 15. The only option I've got, that's got the Core 2 Duo, it's a 2 gig, 800 megahertz frontside bus. Bloody, it really is, for value for money around here, it cost me just short of $1,200. But value for money, best machine in that price range, nothing could come close to it. I upgraded to the True Life. They sell it as a high definition screen, the 1600x9. It's a 15.6 inch screen, and I got the True Life 1600x900 LED screen. And honest to God, it would be the most beautiful screen I've ever looked at. But the caveat to that is, today I sat out on the veranda, and it's that shiny, you could shave yourself in it. So outside on the veranda, when it's really sunny this morning, it was near impossible to see. Inside, just a glorious screen. So that's something that you really need to check out on any, because I'm pretty sure what Sony have, an X-Bright, they all have a very similar thing, probably all made in the same factory. That's something to be careful with. Now, the other thing too, 3D, it's got the, and my sound card, just as a matter of interest, was the Intel, 40, I can't remember what it is now, 48281i, I think it was. But anyway, the fact is I knew Dell sold them in America with Ubuntu on them, so obviously I thought, well, it can't be that hard to get the sound card working, and it wasn't. The other problem I had with 3D was it's got the new GMA X, I think it's a 4500 mobile HD card in it, which supposedly can do true high definition, 1080i. You can also get a bloody Blu-ray player in these, but that was an additional $600, so trust me, I didn't get one of them. But anyway, back to the 3D. In Zusa, as soon as I tried to run Google Earth or Celestial, or Celestia, it would freeze. Now, yeah, as soon as I tried to run something OpenGL in full screen, the bloody thing froze. And I've got no idea why that was. But with Arch, it just runs superb. So, like Jay Lindsay said, it probably because it might have a later Intel driver. Or even it could be, you know, Xorg or Mesa. So, yeah, really happy with it. But they're the things people have got to look out for. Really do your research well. And don't believe the first thing you read.
Now, what was the sound card again? It was an Intel?
Yeah, Intel 8. I think it's the 82801i. There's quite a few incarnations of it, like a G and a H and that. I might have to get back to you on the exact model. I should know. I looked at bloody specifications that much. But, the 82801i, it was.
Now, how would you find out what codec a sound card is using?
Yeah, that's a good question. With my wife's, what I did, as soon as it had booted, I just ran D-Message Pipe Grep HDA. And that's where I was able to tell that it seemed to be probing the BIOS to try to find out what codec it was supposed to use for this particular sound card. And the error message it was getting, and then it would try something else, that's where I started to look. I put that into Google, and that got me on the right track. Okay, so when I got the Dell, I just did a similar search for this particular sound card, which led me first to that original post of where the bloke, you know, recompiled or reinstalled a new debug kernel, all that sort of stuff. But a bit more searching, and I found people with the exact same problems. So, but always, as soon as you boot your machine, if you've got a problem with hardware, Jaylene, that's a good place to start, isn't it? Just do a D-message and grep something specific to the chipset in it. Will probably get you off to a really good start to start finding a avenue to fix it.
Yeah, I'm doing a D-message grep right now. What would I put in there? Like,
Well, try HDA.
Let's see.
If that's what it is.
No.
What card have you got?
It has the HDA Intel. The codec is Realtek.
Yeah, well, maybe try that. I on both mine and my wife's, HDA brings up in D-Message what it's trying to do. Yeah, and it is. It's an 82801i, which is a ICH9 family HD audio chipset from Intel, whatever that all means to everyone.
So what kind of battery life are you getting out of it?
Well, I really haven't tested that so far. Like, I've got about 2 hours. And, like, 2 hours is probably, for me, plenty long. Like, if I go sit on the veranda and do something, that's about it. I don't know that I'd be out there much longer. And if I was, there's a PowerPoint. I put a PowerPoint out there. But, yeah, I haven't tried any of that stuff yet. So you can come out of the bin now, as long as you promise to behave a lot better.
Thank you. I will.
Get back. But no, I'm really pleased with it. I mean, I've got it. I've had 3 Linux distros on it in 4 days, I think. Now I've got Arch set up, and Arch is bloody fast. Honestly, if no one's tried Arch yet, give it a shot. The more I use it, the more I get into it, the more impressed I become with it. The people who developed that just really knew what they were doing.
So really, the only problem you had was with the sound.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and also the 3D in Zeus for some reason. But I suppose out of that was Zeus 11.1. I put Intrepid on it, which is obviously a fair bit later, using a later kernel, and Arch 2 is using a later kernel. So it may have been something that they fixed between, I think 2.7 is it's using. And what, 2.9, I think Arch and that's using now. So, yeah. But I just sound, and it's funny, I've never had trouble with sound before on any Linux system. And because me and Cloud 2 talked about it, I think I put the mocker on myself.
Now, if you would have bought that laptop 3 months from now, you wouldn't have that problem. Probably would have worked out of the box.
Probably would have. I mean, and really, it wasn't that hard to fix. It's in, all you have to do is go into your Etcetera's modprobe.d/sound, or it could be also dash base configuration. And you just put like options and then your card sound dash HDA dash Intel and then space model equals Dell, blah, 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 or whatever it is. It's in, I think on the other show I said it was in user shared documentation, but it's actually in the, it tells you all the different model. If you put in your, the model number of your chip, if you go into, it's actually in the documentation section in the actual kernel. So, you know, user source, kernel documentation, ultrasound, I think, you'll find the README in there. It actually tells you if you've got this model chip, then this is the option you have to pass to the module as it's booting up. So, as long as you know what you're looking for, you know, it's easy to fix all these things. Because if you can read, actually, I guess, as far as to say. Because I just want everyone to know that I put Arch on my laptop and Jalen wasn't anywhere near. He was at self. Okay. He was out partying while I was sitting at home, struggling.
So how was self, Jalen?
It was great. I had a fantastic time. It did seem a little fast-paced for being one day, though.
So it was like just one talk after another?
Yeah, they did three talks and then an hour for lunch, and then it was hour after hour all the way till 5.
Now,
so you
did they have
had 10 minutes to get from where you were going to there.
Did they have like two talks going on at the same time?
Yeah, so they had three going on at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So you had to pick which one you wanted to go to.
Yeah, what I understand about that, if you weren't able to attend the other two, that it's all been recorded by professionals from what Dave was showing, wasn't he? So if you did miss those, you can go and, oh, even if you couldn't attend self, you can go and you'll be able to download all the keynotes, etc.
Right. They had some really nice equipment set up for getting all that video.
Yeah. So I'd imagine, Monster B, you'll be putting links in the show notes to all those with a bit of luck.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Oh, no, I was just saying that Dave was saying that all those keynotes itself were going to be videoed and that you might be able to put in our show notes where people can go and watch them when you find out.
Well, it's going to take them a good amount of time to convert all that and get it onto hard drives and everything.
Oh, right. I'll be using KDEN Live if I take it. Well, that would go without saying. So do you reckon it should have been over 2 days, Jay Lindsay? Spread it out a little bit?
I don't know. It gets a little tricky and runs up your costs when you start going for 2 or 3 days. But yeah, it did seem rushed to do it in one day. If you had several talks that you wanted to see like live, there's no way that you could do it. But this way.
Well, that's exactly how the Ohio Linux Fest is. Same way, one day.
But it really does stress the resources if you add extra days.
Well, I hope that one day I get to go to OLF in self. And don't crank at me for sending him to the bin.
No. Having not been to OLF or self, there isn't really much I could say about this. Yeah, I really want to go to one as well. No, I couldn't do it this year. Maybe next year, I don't know. I'm hoping next year I can do OLF myself, but, you know. I've never run a conference, so I have no idea how much extra work for doing it over 2 days. So, there's not much I can say, really.
Well, get to the bin, then. What good are you? 3 minutes.
Well, that's not fair if you're going to cut me off again and me.
That'll teach him.
I noticed that the rooms were pretty much just the right size for the crowd that they had. If it had been a fair amount of larger of a crowd, they wouldn't have fit in the room. I mean, they pretty much had every seat filled in some of these talks.
And how many attended, roughly, do you think were there?
I think they had close to 500 sign up, but they did a numbers check, I think, and it was something like 400 and something. 440,
450. That's pretty good.
You can't complain. Now, one thing I was really interested to hear was whether Klaatu got his boff off the ground.
As far as I know, they had only got a little bit of talk, and then it never happened.
And that's because everyone thought it was a bit too happy, I think, a boff. That's just wrong.
Well, there were boffs there. I mean, they were spread out throughout the day, but if you went to the talks, you were completely missing it.
Well, I hope that's one thing. I never have to attend the boff.
Would you rather them call it birds of a feather?
Yeah, I actually would.
Well, I would like to recommend a motherboard if somebody's building a system. I bought the Gigabyte GA-G31M. Intel socket LGA775. It's a micro ATX board. Everything on it's Intel. The chipset, the sound, the graphics. The graphics is a 3100 Express. And the audio codec is a Realtek. But everything worked out of the box. And everything is integrated on the board. So if you're looking for a cheap system to build, all you need is this motherboard, a case, some RAM, and CPU, and that's about it. Get yourself a little Linux box for about $150.
Yay, I'm back. No, that sounds cool. Cheap setup.
Yeah, I think after getting this micro ATX, I don't think I would ever go to the full-size motherboards anymore. I mean, this one has everything I need. If I wanted to add, an extra, higher-end video card, I mean, it's got the slot for it.
Do you have any weird issues like having to have a sound card too close to anything else, which causes interference? So now when I was first playing around with upgrading computers, you had to be, try and put the sound card as far away from everything else, because otherwise it can give a slight crackle.
Well, this one has, the sound integrated onto the board.
Yeah, which I suppose is good enough unless you're doing anything really fancy.
Right. Well, I'm talking on it right now, so this is not too fancy.
Yeah, but I mean, for what most people do, you don't really care.
So this board supports the quad core, Core 2 Duo?
Yeah, I went with the lowest grade CPU I could find. It was a Celeron 430. And the main reason I went for it, not only because of the price, the CPU was only $30, but the main reason I went for it because it's 35 watts at full throttle, because I wanted to build a quiet, low-powered machine.
Yeah, this is sort of like a server for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it started out to be, a server. Now it's turning into like a second desktop.
Is that right?
Yeah, I got it sitting right here with Synergy going, so I'm using both computers with two monitors, but with one keyboard and mouse.
And you obviously didn't have any trouble getting sound to work.
No, everything worked out of the box.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the only distro I used on this is Debian Lenny. I haven't tried any other ones, but everything worked out of the box. I didn't have to install nothing or try to configure anything. It just worked. But yeah, this motherboard will support a Core 2 quad if I ever wanted to upgrade. But I really like the socket, the LGA775. I don't know if you guys ever put one together like that. There's no pins on the CPU.
Yeah, it's got the little balls or something, hasn't it?
So you can't damage it. It's...
Yeah, I remember reading that. Yeah, I'd imagine they'll all go over to that. I remember reading about that some time ago.
I think the AMD has it on their higher end. What's that high-end chip they have? Not the Athlon, but it starts with an O.
Optotron.
Yeah, that's it. Some of their higher-end ones are like that.
Right. Yeah, I'd imagine they'll all go over to it. Just those little pins, how many of them would have been bent over the years?
Unfortunately,
I've never touched wood. I've never bent one.
I came close. I had an AMD that I had to take the heatsink off, and when I was taking it, I had to twist it a little bit and then pull up. Well, the whole entire CPU came off with it. Out of the socket, I just pulled it right out, and I was lucky nothing got bent.
Yeah, I've actually had to get the pliers and just straighten one a tiny bit that I'd bent over. Lucky it didn't snap off.
But yeah, it's a really easy CPU to put in. I mean, of course, you know, it's got the little notches. There's only one way you drop it in. I mean, you just drop it in and pull the little lever and it locks right in. And I think it'd be good for somebody that's, you know, maybe like Kajari, where you wouldn't have to worry about bending the pins up.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, in saying that, it's someone who's getting old and should wear glasses, but he's too stubborn to go and buy them, would be another bloke.
But I have no complaints about this board. The only drawback I think it would have for some people, it only has two memory slots. So the max memory is 4 gigs. I only have 2 gigs in there now, but that's plenty enough for me right now.
Yeah, I still argue that unless you're running virtual machines, I only got 1 gig in that laptop. One because Dell wanted, I think, $134 for the extra gig, and I knew if I decided to do it, I would get it off eBay anyway. And the other thing is, too, just having watched my RAM usage on the laptops, you know, it's very rare for me to go over 500. And, I mean, I have 3 gig in my desktop, but that's purely because I do a bit of video editing on the desktop, and RAM probably helps a fair bit. I've never actually watched the usage when I run KDN Live, but I'd imagine RAM comes in pretty handy for doing stuff like that. But 1 gig's plenty.
Yeah, that's what I have on my Triple E, one gig. I mean, the most I've ever seen used was probably 400 megabytes.
I bet you had Firefox open when you did it.
Yep.
Yeah, Firefox lately just seems to be chewing so much RAM.
Oh, and Lost in Bronx in the chat room asked what the dimensions were for this micro ATX. It's 9.6 inch by 7.6 inch, and a normal size ATX is 12 by 9.6 inch, so it's a little bit smaller.
So this would be a tiny little board. You could get I'd imagine, a really nice case if you were looking at building a mini front end or something. It would be a really good board for that. You'd certainly be able to put plenty of processing power in it.
There's a lot of nice cases for that, you know, and I think the micro ATX is pretty popular, you know, for stuff like that. If you take a look at Newegg and look at all the cases, it seems that that's the most popular case, that form factor.
Yeah. But the only thing about
you know, micro ATX will fit in a regular ATX case anyway.
Yeah, they will. They already have the holes and everything in most cases for it.
But that would almost negate the reason you're buying it, wouldn't it?
Because I think the back of it's, you know, where all your plugins are, is 9.6 inch on both of them for the micro ATX and the normal size ATX. So the back of it's standard.
Yeah, the gasket will fit a standard box. No problem.
And I think the next one below that is the mini ITX. I don't have the dimensions for that.
Yeah, but then you get into specialized cases, though.
Yeah, I had one and I sent it back. It was too much trouble.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one that sort of bent, didn't it?
Yeah, it was the brand name was Zotac, I think. Zotac or Zotac. But as soon as I put the heatsink and fan on the, because it has like 4 holes on the outside of the CPU, and the heatsink goes on, and you have like these push-ins. They're like plastic push-ins that lock in. As soon as I locked them in, the whole entire board warped. And then it wouldn't, you know, I got an oversized case for it, and it still wouldn't fit in the case. I could have bought a smaller heatsink and fan, but it would have cost as much as the motherboard.
Yeah, if that's right, then what's the point?
Well, I rambled enough about this. You got anything for us, Azimuth?
Oh, I don't know. I've been playing with GPS navigation in Linux. I don't know. Let's see. I got a link here. I'll put it in the forum or in the IRC chat. Let's see. Maybe I will. Yeah, it's close enough. What I've been using is a program called RoadNav. Get it SourceForge, and just use it with a cheap little USB GPS, and you're all set. You got a walking, talking road navigation system. It will download all the free maps you can stand for every place in the U.S., and they are working on it for using the maps from OpenStreetMaps for Europe. So it works. It's one thing that kind of kept me involved with Windows was to run the navigation software. And I was really pleased to find that I could do this in Linux. Yeah, that link up there also has a link within it for a screenshot of what it looks like on my Miso netbook. You can get the aerial views as well as the maps. It uses the Terra server for the aerial views, and it'll just overlay on the maps, and it makes it quite nice for figuring out where the heck you are sometimes.
You know, what kind of device? I'm sorry, go ahead, Peter.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, is that picture there, so is that using, like, it's overlaying the map over Google Maps? Is that what's happening there, or?
No, that's not Google Maps. That's the Terra server. One of the U.S. government sites. These are all free maps. It's all running open source and free government supplied maps and data. It uses the Tiger data from the U.S. It's the U.S. Census Bureau that has the Tiger data, I believe. But for it. It gets all the vector maps from the government sites, and this is there's no subscriptions to get maps to it or anything like you get with a lot of the commercial GPS units. And one thing that's nice with it, you can use just a super cheap USB GPS. Guess they sell them on Amazon for less than $40. If you already have a netbook or a notebook, you put a $40 GPS with it, run the maps, and you've got a navigation system that'll even talk and give you directions as you go.
Now, with the GPS dongle that you plugged into your Miso, did you have to research that to make sure it was going to work in Linux, or just about every single one of them does?
It's the type of data that they put out. What do they call it? I'd have to look it up. It's the NE. It's terrible having an old memory. NMEA data output, any GPS that'll do that. As far as that goes, you can use this this software with use it with your Garmin or your Magellan if they're set to put the right data out.
Yeah, that's pretty standard, I think, because I think that's what the one in the boat uses. I'm sure I've read that on just about every GPS I've ever owned. Yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? And I bet you've never seen a blue screen of death on it like I get at my bloody car, one that runs Windows CE.
Did you take a screenshot yet?
I'm going to. No, we definitely do it, and you might include it in the show notes next to Az's picture. Live and learn.
Well, I've used DeLorme Street Maps on Windows for, been 12, 15 years. I don't remember exactly how far it was. Back to version 3 or whatever that it came out, and it was in the early 90s or some place. And I finally wore out my old DeLorme Tripmate, and I replaced it with DeLorme's LT40 Earthmate. But it was only $40 with the Windows software to come with it, which I'm not using. But the GPS works fine, and it just works super on Linux with the Road Nav software. Now the DeLorme software, it would work in Wine back 2005 version, but the 2009 version will not run under Wine. Yeah, Wine's missing things that they want, and kind of ticks me off at DeLorme that they don't support Linux. But that's fine. There's other things in Linux that work nearly as well, and it cost me nothing.
Yeah, I might start to investigate and see what that's like in Australia. Look, I was just looking at OpenStreetMap, but there doesn't appear to be much mapped over here with that. But
yeah,
could
the thing
be
about OpenStreetMap is that if you have GPS, you can drive down the road and map onto OpenStreetMap for other people.
Yeah, you can add maps to the OpenStreetMaps. That is an open project, and they welcome input on that. You can go out and make your own maps and add to their database.
And from what I understand, they're a lot more detailed because people go to the trouble of putting in like lanes and parks and street posts and light lamp posts and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the OpenStreetMap project is really kind of neat. It's a do-it-yourself project, and there's a whole bunch of people doing it themselves. Roy and Golfer had been playing around with that. I don't know how he's come out, but he had a lot of tracks mapped on it around where he lives there in Scotland.
Yeah, didn't they have the bloke who started it on the Linux Link Tech Show a while back? And recall something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Is someone to do with it, the project anyway?
Well, they're finding ways of putting the OpenStreetMap data on the RoadNav software. So, you know, where you can use the OpenStreetMaps in it, they're getting places that the U.S. Geological Survey does not cover. And there's also maps becoming available for it in Canada, too, I believe, through the Canadian government.
Yeah, I'm going to post a link in the chat room. Will this device work with it? It says it's a USB GPS receiver with Linux drivers available.
Yeah, that one on the left.
Oh, the one on the left is that's the one that Google or Amazon sells. You can buy that for, it's under $40.
Really?
Then everybody, all the reviews on that one is great. It's a little unit built in China. Got a magnetic base on it, and you can use it in even marine situations. It's waterproof.
Yeah, and that's the one I found here. Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, I found that when Ads first mentioned to me that he was playing around with this sort of stuff. I found that one on eBay over here. I think it was about $80. But it looked like the pick of the bunch.
And it's the same brand as this? G-Mouse?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's okay. Identical to the one I found on eBay.
Yeah, it's a BU 353, I believe. I can't remember the company that puts it out. It's U.S. Geological or something like that.
Look at that. If you want the software, you want to buy it with the software, it's $176. Unreal.
Okay, the cable that comes with it is 60 inches long.
Yeah, it's a 5-foot cable, which is all you need.
And it's waterproof?
You get more than that, and it's in the way. And it's waterproof. Waterproof magnetic base.
So you can stick that on your roof of your car?
Yeah, you can stick it on your roof or stick it on the doorpost or, you know, any place that you got metal, or if you don't have metal, don't worry about it. Throw the darn thing on the dash.
I'm going to have to look into one of these since I get about 7 hours battery life in the Triple E. This would be nice for a small road trip.
If you had one of these, you'd take a road trip just to play with it.
Well, I use mine on a trip up to Washington to see my son, and it just worked fine all the way. I preloaded all the maps. I will warn you, you want to preload the maps because when you get out of range of Wi-Fi, if you haven't got the maps in there, it don't know where the heck it is. Well, it knows where it is, but it won't show you any roads. And I did find one thing with the road nav. If you're running it with the aerial view overlay on it, and you get away from your Wi-Fi, and you don't have the aerial views in there, well, it will effectively lock up, because it's sitting there trying to pull the maps down once it, you know, it has moved into that area, and it won't do anything until it gets the maps.
So if I had one of these with no internet, what could it do? Nothing?
Well, you got to have internet someplace along the way to preload your maps, and it's easy to load the maps once you get you get the software loaded up. You just click on a state, and it'll get the data for the state, and then as you just click on wherever you want, and it'll pull the individual counties and get all the maps and everything in them. And so you only need to download what you're going to use if you don't ever plan to be on the other side of the Mississippi River. Well, there's no sense in getting any maps over there, which makes it nice. You don't have a lot of extra data used in your computer. Let's see, the brand on that one is U.S. GlobalSat. Is people that make that waterproof USB GPS receiver.
Do you have a link to that so I can put it in the show notes? U.S. Global?
I've got a... Yeah, I can do that. That's just the Amazon site for it. But that's one option. There you can also, like I say, you can use the DeLorme Earthmates on them too, and they're relatively cheap.
You could use a lot of the Bluetooth devices too, couldn't you? There's a lot of Bluetooth GPS devices got the Bluetooth dongle for.
Yeah, but what you're going to end up with the Bluetooth is that can be fairly battery hungry, and you're not going to get all that many hours for a long road trip out of a Bluetooth GPS.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, the BU-353s you can get in Australia for $65. So that's a pretty good price.
Well, I had three parties to go to today, an anniversary and two birthday parties, and they were 40 miles apart on some of them, and I had a small window to get in there. The stupid things all wanted to start at the same time, and I had about 80 miles to cover to get between the three of them, and I went ahead and used the GPS and the road nav, and found my best way and didn't get lost, and I made all of them on time.
But you can't complain about that. I should send you to the bin for bragging about being Miss Popularity and getting invited to three parties.
Well,
so you can get in the bin for that.
Well, again?
Yeah, 5 minutes. You won't be doing that again.
Who'd you send to the bin? I was in the chat room.
Bloody Zoke.
Ah,
that
poor guy.
As brag about going to three parties, that stuffy you can go to the bin.
So you just took it out on him.
Yep, he deserved it. While we're talking about sites,
Zoke's a swept-wing boy tonight. Is that the way we got that, Peter?
Well, here I am. I get to be the sheriff. 3:30's not on. Everyone's just been so nice to each other. I wouldn't have got to send anyone to the bin if Zoke wasn't here. And what's the good of being the sheriff if you can't send someone to the bin? I mentioned Celestia when I was testing out. Do you blokes know about that? Have you ever heard of Celestia?
Yeah, that's video editing software, isn't it?
No. It's a lot of people refer to it as a planetarium, but it's not really. They actually say it's a space simulation, and if you said that, you'd think, oh, it's a game. But no, what it is you can take tours of the whole universe. In glorious 3D, and I think they used the textures to from NASA, you know, all the pictures of the planets, etc. And if you've never looked at it, do yourself a favor and go and get it. And just once you install it, you can sit there for hours. And me and my daughter, once we get on the computer and load it up, and you can get scripts so you can take virtual tours of the universe. And as you're flying around, you know, it'll tell you on the screen about how far you are sitting from Mars at the moment and what you can see on Mars and all this sort of stuff. And it's really brilliant. Yeah, Monster B just posted the things there, www.shatters.net/Celestia. But then get over to a place called the Celestia Motherlode. And that's where you can download your high-resolution images and stuff like for textures of the planets, etc. Plus a lot of scripts and that are on that site as well, I think. But honestly, it's one of the most beautiful applications I've ever seen. And if Zoke was here, he could tell you that you can get... a lot of people have done... There must be scripts and images and 3D models of something like the Doctor Who universe and the Star Trek universe and all this, which is a bit far out for me. I just enjoy looking at the real stuff. But definitely have a look.
Have you put this on your projector yet?
Yeah, we do. Me and little Miss 64, we sit there and we load up a few scripts and it is beautiful. It really is. And it was the first thing I put on my new laptop to try out the screen to see, you know, how good that screen really was. And it just impresses me every time I fire it up. And I think Dan asked me once in the chat, you know, why I bother with the NVIDIA drivers and 3D. And it's really because of this. Google Earth 2 I use a fair bit. But you can just waste hours once you get into this.
I'm looking at the screenshots now. It's pretty.
Oh, it is. And they just don't do it justice. But just to fly around. And like I said, but get the scripts. Because after you fly around, you run out of things. Because you don't know what half the... You can go and visit asteroids and even go and I think you can go and go see where Voyager is at the moment. You know, that bloody space probe that launched, I think, in the 70s, which is way out past Pluto, I think, these days. You can go and see where that is. And the other thing, too, I think you can download scripts for, although I think there's only, eight space shuttles left to go. You can get a script, so when one blasts off, you can get the script and you can actually see and follow it as it whizzes around the Earth in real time and stuff like that. It's just brilliant.
And it's all real time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can do that with it. I'm just trying to think. I had another program that you downloaded the actual script from NASA, but I'm pretty sure Celestial did it too. And you can go to the International Space Station. That's another thing. There's a model for that. You can go and look at the Hubble Space Telescope, where it happens to be above the Earth at the moment. Jake, have you looked at this?
Well, Celestia.
Yeah.
So, a while back, yes, I did look at it.
And did you, find the TARDIS? I think you can go out and someone's put the TARDIS floating around out in space and you can actually go and look at it somewhere.
I didn't look at that one. I did look at some of the Star Wars and Star Trek ones and things, and that's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. So some people get a lot of trouble, don't they? But we found the bloody TARDIS once upon a time.
If you find out where it is, let me know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's just a script somewhere on there.
And it's available in the Debian repo.
Yeah, it's in the Arch. It's in the Zeus.
It's showing the KDE front end and a GNOME front end.
Yeah, well, I think it just runs in the browser, really. But, yeah, I'm not sure. That might be wrong. Don't listen to that. Or maybe originally, I just seem to think it used to run in Conqueror. Or maybe it just looked similar to Conqueror in the KDE front end.
Well, what's the glut or glut front end? G-L-U-T?
Don't know.
It's a minimal front end. The lightweight front end.
Alright.
Alright, Doug, what do you have for us?
I got a couple of stories here. Don't know whether anyone saw or is subscribed to the dailycupoftech.com. They had a big list of 100 things that a geek must do before they die. They have this big checklist and links on what to do, and there's things like build a Linux firewall, build a PC, build a robot, build an HTML-based website using Notepad, bypass a computer password on all major operating systems, and I thought it's a pretty funny list.
Sorry, Jake, what was the site?
Hang on, I'm going to post it into the IRC now.
Yeah.
You can see it there. But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff here. You know, create music with keyboard. When I was at university, I wrote an assembly program to convert the bottom row of the keyboard, you know, ZX, CVB, and M and so on, into a piano player, basically. Download Wikipedia, know who Mulder and Scully are, jailbreak an iPhone, okay, I disagree with that one a bit. Hide a file behind a JPEG, done that.
They should have just said break an iPhone over a window user's head.
I was thinking more of taking out use it as target practice. Go for Mrs. Oak just said, yeah, that's a good one as well.
Yeah, down like 45. I think we should condense this list down to maybe 90.
Well, yes, possibly. I mean, some of these are a bit naff.
Learn how to install Mac OS on a PC.
Yeah, I think they got to sort of 70 or something and figured they'd try and make it up to 100. But there's that one, so I thought that was pretty funny. I got an interesting link here. In theory, it helps stop spam. Not because it blocks spam or anything. Hang on. Posted it into the IRC now. What it does is you copy that link and put it on your website, and then when the spammer reads through your page, or the robot reads through the page, it follows this link, and then when it gets to that page, it creates an infinite number of other pages with random garbage email addresses on there. So, as the blurb says, email harvesting bots, otherwise known as data miners, follow links, grabbing email addresses out of each page it visits. When one of these bots comes to your site, all sites you've linked get crawled for email addresses. This site renders these harvesters' lists useless by filling them with invalid email addresses. Once a spammer hits this site, they enter an infinite loop of randomly created email addresses, starting with the ones it generates when it first comes to the site. Once a mailing list has been poisoned with a number of invalid email addresses, the resources required to send a message on this list increases, even though the number of valid recipients has not. This forces the spammer to exhaust more resources to send email, in theory costing the spammer money and time. A best-case scenario will cause the spammer to throw out the mailing list completely. So, it sounds like a cool idea. So, you know, I think everyone ought to stick a link to that website. It's officeofstrategicinfluence.com/spam, or it should be in the show notes, because I think, you know, everyone hates spam. So that would be a cool idea.
And it's got the code. The code's all there. All you got to do is cut and paste it
basically
in your website.
Yes. Yeah, yep. And it'll create you the link, and that's it. So that one's pretty cool. I've got a funny little thing here, which I shall just paste into IRC here. It's a handy cheat sheet for time travelers.
This almost sounds like sin bin material. Come on!
I think this one's funny, because it explains how to build some basic things, so you can claim that everything was your idea. So here we go. Technology. Heat milk just below its boiling point and it won't curdle. And 99.999% of the bugs in it will be killed. Congratulations, you just invented pasteurization.
Louis.
And then he goes on, yeah. A moving electric field produces magnetism and vice versa. Wrap copper wire around an iron core and run electricity through it and you've got an electromagnet. Don't have any electricity? Put a magnet on a water wheel and put your copper wrapped iron beside the wheel. And hey presto, you're converting mechanical energy into electricity. Don't have any magnets, and you know, it explains a bunch of these little silly things, but how to do a ton of stuff here. I found it funny anyway.
Yeah, you can waste a bit of time looking through that. You're lucky. That's not too bad. Otherwise, you are gone.
But yeah, so I thought it's funny. Yeah, hang this up in your time machine.
Do you have one?
No, I don't have one.
Not yet, right?
Well, technically, my body itself is a time machine because it travels through space and time at a rate of 1 second per second. But
Jake, get in the bin.
I was gonna say, Peter, you can see him now.
Mute him, Monster B. Get him out of there.
I know, that's my last
2 minutes.
Oh, no,
you're
no,
gone. But my body is a time machine. A load of shit.
Oh, man. So everyone got to go, right?
Yeah, I think Jay Lindsay's asleep.
Well, I would say so after driving 8 hours today.
Yeah, big day.
Pegwan 330, they dropped off.
Unlock a laser pointer's full potential. Fair enough. That's on that list. Yeah, I'd be stuffed. Survive in the Linux argument. I'd be out.
Well, I really don't have any feedback this week. So I'll just use the Linux Cranks feedback. How about that? Well, let's see. This guy named Kevin Ridgen sent an email saying, let me pull it up real quick. Okay, he's sending this to the Linux Cranks. Great podcast, guys, and I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, my Zune does not support the OGG format, so it's bye from me. Must admit, changing the format so people can't listen to it is something I would expect from Apple or Microsoft, but that's life. Thanks again.
Didn't we go through all this months and months ago?
Yeah, but we've been OGG for 7 months.
Yeah.
So you made it 7 months before you sent this in?
Yeah. Can you hook one of those Zunes up to Linux? Do they act as a mass storage device? I don't know anything about them.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Well, then all I got to... What was his name? Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
Kevo Buddy Cheat Potter. Try that. It'll convert it for you. It really ain't that hard. But thanks for the email anyway. Yeah, we got another one. I won't read it because it was like they're 2.5 pages long. But Cafe Ninja sent the Linux Cranks a really nice email as well, just thanking us for the time we spend doing it. He obviously knows we do a lot of research to do Linux Cranks.
All right, and the next one is an audio clip I cut out of Linux from the Ham Shack. Gave us a mention. Let me pull that one up.
So let me run through the first one here. I was on IRC the other night and ended up hooking up with Monster B from over to Linux Cranks Linux Podcast. We talked for a while, and he said he really enjoyed the show. And he's not even an amateur radio operator. And those guys, they're a little wild, but they know their stuff. If y'all listen to Chad Wallenberg, he hangs out with that bunch and that kind of stuff. And I was really happy that somebody of that knowledge in the Linux world would find our show interesting and something that he would take the time to listen to. So I'd like to say thank you to Monster B for his kind comments. And I will suggest that y'all go over and, you know, we try to give y'all information on other programs to go listen to. I would suggest y'all go listen to Linux Cranks. I have two things to tell you before you go hunting for it. Number one, it is not family friendly. So if you go over there and download their program, don't play it around your wife and kids, and darn sure don't play it in front of your boss. Number two, they are hardcore Linux users over there, so it only comes in OGG format. There is no MP3 format. So if y'all want to go over and give it a listen, and I had the URL up, I can't remember what I done with it, but Russ will find that, and we'll get it plugged in here somewhere. Okay, now I've run my head a few minutes. It's your turn, Russ.
I don't have anything to run my head about, except that I did find the URL for the Linux Cranks OGCast, and they call it an OGCast because they are hardcore and don't do MP3 formats, and it's at linuxcranks.info. So you can go ahead and download the program there if you're interested in that, and we will put a link to their site, or I will put a link to their site one of these days when I get around to doing that kind of thing.
Alrighty.
That's pretty cool, huh? Have you guys listened to them yet?
Now, you mentioned them just the other night.
Yeah.
Well, now that I've got the new laptop, see, I haven't had G-Potter bothered. I didn't bother setting up G-Potter on the old laptop because I didn't think my new one was going to take so long to get here. So, no, might get you to send me the link later.
I'll put it in the show notes.
As you'd probably enjoy that because isn't it ham radios and Linux?
Yeah, I'm an amateur radio operator. I hadn't found that podcast yet, but now that I found it, I will listen to it.
Speaking of G-Potter, didn't 1601, 16.1 come out? Is it 0.1?
What was that, Peter?
I just seem to recall you mentioning a new version of G-Potter came out in the last couple of weeks. 16.1 or something?
Yeah, it did. I'm trying to think if it's 16.1 or 16.2.
I don't know, but
I noticed a few changes. It seems more stable.
Well, that's just one application that is just getting better and better. When did we start using it? Probably 12 months ago, maybe?
Yeah, I think I started out with like 0.10.
I remember you put me onto it. Whenever you started using it, I probably started using it a week later. And,
I quit using it about the time you guys started using it.
Well, I don't know why you stopped using it, but you should really revisit it because it did have a few problems there, but sometimes it would pull down the same feeds each time.
Well, I'll tell you why I quit using it, Bash Potter just worked out better for me. I have Bash Potter installed on a NFS share, and it's available from any computer on my LAN. All the podcasts that I download, and as well as I can also run it manually anytime from any computer around here. I don't have it all cluttered up on any particular computer. It's just all sitting out on my server, and I can clean up the files, the ones I've listened to from anywhere, as well as listen to them.
And Bash Potter, of course, is the one that Link did from the Linux Link Tech Show. But there's a few incarnations of it floating around the net at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, a bunch of people.
Oh, there's probably 30 or 40.
Oh, sorry. Chess did his own version, for example. I know.
Yeah. I think Dan modified one that just pulled down the last 10. But anyway, certainly if people are looking for it, it doesn't do as much as what G-Potter does, I don't think. But, yeah, I used it for a good while, too.
No, I'm just using Bash Potter.
Well, one thing I like about Bash Potter, you go in and you look at it, and it is simply a Bash script, and you follow that Bash script through, and you know nothing about scripting at all, and you can follow the darn thing and see what it's doing, and by the time you spend an hour or so just reading through it and checking the man pages on the different commands it uses, and you kind of learn a bit about scripting strictly by osmosis.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I should actually
It is beautiful in its simplicity.
Yeah, I did use G-Potter a while back. I was trying it out, and so I said, yeah, make a podcast directory in, Holmes Oak Podcast, which is where I have Bashpotter downloading stuff. And I said, set up my podcasts and then marked them all as read, so because I already grabbed them with Bashpotter. And then said, go check. And it downloaded about 3 gigs worth of stuff. And I never figured out what that stuff was because there wasn't a single podcast in that list. It was just other files. I had no clue what it was doing that. So then I said,
Well, you end up with hash file names in it. If you use it direct. What you have to do is just export them to a folder.
No, that's been changed now, Ad. They've actually changed that. Yeah, where before you're right.
They have real names on the podcast now?
In their own directories and that now. That's been fixed in the last couple of versions. That was certainly a big complaint.
I've tried to mark everything as red, so it shouldn't have been downloading anything anyway, which is what I couldn't figure out why it was downloading stuff. Because, of course, I used Bashpodder in the morning. It ran automatically in the morning. And then I installed Gpodder and said, well, you know, here are my podcasts. Mark them all as red. Don't download. You know, download from now on. I forget what the option was called. So it shouldn't have been downloading anything.
Yeah, I've had that problem too, Zach.
But then what really pissed me off about it was I went in and wanted to move the podcast directory somewhere else so I could try and figure out what the files were. And it moved all the podcasts it's downloaded and then deleted the directory and wiped out every single other file in that directory. So all my Bashpodder setup and everything was wiped. And that just pissed me off. Because there was no reason just to delete all the files. So then I deleted Gpodder and went back to Bashpodder.
Yeah.
And said,
I'll give it another try. It really is.
Well, I mean, Bashpodder does everything I needed to do. I listen to pretty much every single podcast on my laptop, so I don't need it to faff around and do iPod things or anything like that, MP3 players. So all I get it to do is download them, stick in the directory, and then run whatever I feel like, Excel or Amarok or whatever you feel like, or just even mPlayer from the command line, just to run to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, another nice feature with Gpodder, the way the old one would do it, if you get like a bad feed, it would sit there forever trying to read it. Now it has like a timeout feature. So after so many seconds, it'll automatically time out and go to the next one. I was having problems with the Ubuntu UK podcast. Seems like once a week it would just hang. Okay, I found that web address for Linux and the Ham Shack, blacksparrowmedia.com/LHS. I can never remember that. So you guys got anything else before I wrap it up?
Nah, that's all for me.
So what song do you want to hear, Peter?
Yeah, let me think. How about Sitting on My John Deere, Read My G-John Letter? Have you heard of that one?
Let me see if I can find it.
Lou Watson, I believe.
Yep, Lou Watson, Sitting on My John Deere. Okay, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Jake, Bean.
Oh, and remember, the website is titradio.info, and you can send feedback to a really simple email address, feedback@titradio.info. All right, see you next week, or in 2 weeks.
Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. She didn't like the simple life, living on the farm. All I wanted was a wife to hold in my arms. She never liked my tractor, I didn't like her mouth. I'm headed to the back 40, she's heading south. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. She always liked the country club, highfalutin crowd. I had better things to do, like pulling a plow. Now she's history, since I read my mail. I guess the chemistry has gone straight to well. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. John Letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading the Dear John Letter. Sitting on my John Deere, reading the Dear John Letter.
Wow, that was professional.
That is bloody good.
That's better than a normal attempt. Oh, wait, am I out of the sin bin yet? I forget. The
sin bin.
The titty bin. what booby bin, that was it. Sin bin was hockey, isn't it? Ice hockey or something?
Once you made that, did you see that speaker test thing? You might wait that in the show notes. That's just a good thing to know when you want to bloody see if you've got your sound card working. Speaker-test. It's just... I don't know, post it again.
Speaker-test. I'll try it out right now. Once you give me the command.
You got it?
No, I'm waiting for you. Okay.
No, dude.
I have it. Let's see if it works.
There'd be a lady saying front, left, front, right.
Front, left, front,
yeah.
Right. Front, left, front, right, front, left. Front, right, front, left, front, right,
repeat it
front,
five times.
Left, front, right.
Yep, that was it.
Yeah. Now, change it to C6, or L1.
C6.
Front, left, front, right.
Yeah, that's working, because she's saying front, left, center, front, right, rear, right. Rear, right. But you don't have the channel.
Right,
nah,
but two speakers hooked up.
Yeah. But if you read it, is that what she's saying? You should be getting an output on your terminal.
I'm getting the output, but she's not saying it.
Yeah. But if you had, like, when I run it in the lounge room, I get them all.
Can I make her say anything else?
No, I don't think so. Show me, eat boy. Show me now. You mean like that?
Yeah.
No, I can't help doing that one.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.